Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Go ahead.
Today, Brian Rast, the guy who beat Phil Hellmuth, heads up to win this summer's $50,000 buy-in Poker Players Championship at the World Series of Poker. And he played in the inaugural events of the Epic Poker League in Las Vegas last week. We'll talk to him about that. And we'll also bring in the guy behind the Epic Poker League, Jeffrey Pollack, who wants to respond to some things that we said about the league on our show a couple of weeks ago and maybe do a little post-mortem on their first weekend of activity, which drew a little bit more than half of the number of players who were officially eligible for it, and we'll get into all that in just a few minutes. Hi, I am Paul Harrah, sitting at the feature table in the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, and my partner Dennis Phillips has just gotten off a plane and landed in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, where he is at the Hollywood Casino, where both of us will be competing later this week in the Indiana State Poker Championships. Hi, Dennis.
Well, how you doing, Paul? Weather is great over here.
I'm looking forward to getting there sometime tomorrow night and then playing in a deep stack event on Thursday, and then we're both playing in the main event on Saturday, right?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. TK and Kevin, the two guys that run it over here, met me at the airport and brought me out. We got caught up a little bit. They had a tremendous turnout at the beginning. I think they had 1,600 in their first event.
Wow.
Worked really, really well. Yeah, I mean, they're tickled to death so far with the turnouts. Friday is their satellite day, and they're expecting the huge turnouts for the sit-and-goes and for the megas that they got running that day. It's going to be prime time. If you're planning to come here this weekend, get here a day early, play in some of these satellites. They should be awesome.
You just came from another poker tournament in upstate New York at Turning Stone Casino, part of the Heartland Poker Tour. How'd that go?
Well, good and bad. My first time up to Turning Stone, and I was pleasantly surprised. It's about 30 miles outside of Syracuse, kind of out in the boonies, I thought, a little bit. We got up there, and it was just, I was totally amazed. The resort itself has over 1,000 rooms. It's got three major golf courses up there, PGA level. It's like they played a PGA up there. They have everything from an indoor driving range to a couple of four-star restaurants. It was amazing, and it was a Heartland Tour, so Todd and the boys put together, of course, a really nice tournament, and they had a huge turnout. They had 443 in their main event up there, about 100 more than they were expecting. So, you know, first prize, $160,000, not bad.
Mm-hmm. That was a $1,500 or $1,600 buy-in, their main event?
Yeah, $1,600, $1,500 into the prize. Again, they just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. But to give kudos to Turning Stone, they've been promoting the heck out of this for the last 4 or 6 weeks. A ton of different satellites and mega satellites and even a few free rolls to get into this to promote it. So there were a lot of guys that worked their way into this tournament. So, you know, if you've only invested $100, $300 and you've got a chance to win $160,000, that's a pretty good value. And
yeah,
so they really worked it well, and they promoted the heck out of it for the last 6 weeks. Beautiful place up there. Next time I'm taking my golf clubs, as bad a golfer as I'm at, I still want to play on these courses up there. So
any other,
fun, and I will be back.
Any other pros whose names we'd know?
Well, yeah. Lacey Jones was up there. Bernard Lee was up there. And Darvin was up there.
Darvin Moon.
Darvin Moon showed up with his new toy. He just spent a $120,000 for a car, and he was up there. He had to take it somewhere to show it off.
$120,000 for a car? What kind of car?
Well, we'll let Darvin talk about it sometime. I never actually saw the car or anything. He was talking about it and all. He and Wendy were up there, his wife. Darvin's a great guy, and I intended to sit down with him and find out exactly the details on this car. All I know is he wrote out a check for $120,000 and said he stole it.
Well, I'm guessing for $120,000, it's no less than a Porsche.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking probably a little above that. This is not a new car. This is a classic car.
Oh, I see.
So my guess, because I know what he likes and everything like that, I wouldn't be surprised if it was one of the classic Mustangs that he picked up.
probably a little bit bigger than the lawnmower he bought for his wife after coming in second to Joe Catta a couple of years ago at the main event.
And I was always going to ask him on that one, does it have a push start or does she have to pull it?
So you had a chance to talk to him. Tell us what he's been up to, because nobody's really seen or heard from him in quite a while. Has he been playing poker? Has he been traveling at all? What's he been up to, just in the woods?
No. He's been playing some and traveling around quite a bit. But he's invested a lot of that money back into his livelihood, which is the lumber company, and picked up some new equipment. He's bought some more land. He's investing it wisely and got it set up so that, you know, he should be set for life if he does this right, and he sounds like he is.
Good.
So while he likes playing poker and such, he doesn't really like the media attention, and he likes his business, too. He and Wendy are just kind of traveling around, having fun, and enjoying life. And that's very, very good.
Nice. You also mentioned that Bernard Lee is there. He's our friend who represents Foxwoods Casino and has his own poker radio show in the Boston area. He's actually made the final table. They're down to six, which will be the TV table for the HPT telecasts. And he's got a stack of chips, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's in second place. He's got over $2 million. He ended up winning a couple of races when he needed to win them. You know, you go in with ace, king versus nine, and, you know, if it wins, you're in great shape. If it loses, you're, you know, consoling with other people at the bar or something. But he's won a couple of races. He's done very well. He's a great player. Had a lot of patience the first day. Didn't catch many cards. Had a lot of patience. Finished up the first day with about 60,000, just enough to be dangerous. And then he caught some hands. And, you know, he's a good player, a solid one. Nobody likes being at the table with Bernard.
So how deep did you go in the main event up there?
Oh, you would bring that up, wouldn't you?
Well,
I survived day one with about 65,000, which is a little above chip average, not much. Built it up throughout the day. We went from 443 down to about 65, and they were paying the top 60. And I got involved in a hand. I don't want to sound like nobody wants to hear bad beat stories. I don't know. It was one where I was a slight favorite, so you know, 90+%.
What?
Small blind. I woke up with a nice pair of tens. Person under the gun raised a preflop. I just smooth called because I was out of position. We're getting close to the money. You know. She had more chips than I did. So, you know, you have to take everything into account. And
yep.
I got to see a flop then fairly reasonable. Small blind followed along probably for a similar reason. So the pot's got a little over 30,000. Comes out a 2-4-4 flop with two clubs. I check it because I know I've played with this person before. I know there's another bet coming out no matter whether they hit it or not. Doesn't make any difference. Big blind also checks. She fired 25,000 out. Came around to me. I raised it to 52,000. Big blind got out of the way. She insta-shoved. Now, you know, stop and analyze this. You know, what hands is she going to shove with there? Because she's shoving 200+ thousand out there. Do you honestly think with aces or kings or queens she's going to do that? If she flopped a set, she's going to do that? No. Probably not. I mean, there are two clubs out there, but that's not exactly a danger. 2-4-4, you know.
Yep.
So, anyhow, I actually talked it out a little bit. The hand I was afraid of was she'd have two large clubs like an ace-jack, where she'd be even a slight favorite to my pocket tens.
Yep.
More than likely, though, she had an overpair, but below mine. And truthfully, she could have done that with air. You know, there's even a slim chance of that. Or she could have done it with like a 7-8 of clubs. You know, lots of hands, a wide range of them, but the only ones I'm worried about, to be truthful, a slim chance she had pocket jacks or she had two big clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two hands that I didn't want her to have. She turned over the pocket threes. So, you know, when
I'm drawing dead. You're drawing dead at this point. It's a 4-4-2 board. You've got 10, she's got threes. You're dead. You're ahead and drawing dead, as our old friend Joe McGowan used to say.
Well, I was packing my bag up. Absolutely. At least it didn't come 5-8 or something like that, okay?
Yeah.
No, she caught the three. You know, what do you do? It's a $390,000 pot,
mm-hmm.
which would have put me in the top five in the tournament with only a little over 60 people left. I would have been very happy to be in that position.
Sure.
But wasn't to be, so.
You know, so you tap the table,
say,
yeah. Yeah, you give them all a nice hand and a good luck, and you walk out and you make sure nobody hears you cursing at the top of your lungs inside your head.
That's pretty much it. It sounds like you've almost been there one or two times.
Yeah, a few times, both in cash games and in tournaments. It's happened to every poker player along the way. Well, I hope it gets better for you at Hollywood later this week, and I'm looking forward to getting over there to Indiana tomorrow. So anyway, we mentioned that the Epic Poker League had its big inaugural events over the course of the last week or so, and Jeffrey Pollack is the executive director of Federated Sports and Gaming. That's the organization behind the Epic Poker League. We've had Jeffrey on the show many times over the years, going back to his days when he was commissioner of the World Series of Poker. Now he's running the Epic Poker League, and when we talked about it a couple weeks ago, he actually sent a text to Dennis and said, you know, I'd like to come on and talk about some of the things you guys have said about Epic. And so we've invited him to do that now and maybe also do a little bit of a postmortem on that first event. Jeffrey, welcome back to the Final Table.
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you. Thanks for having me back.
Congratulations on what the players say was a pretty successful inaugural event last week.
Thank you. I think our debut was good. We're pleased with the turnout. We're pleased with operationally how relatively smooth things were. There are a couple of kinks we need to work out. There always will be. But overall, the reviews were good, and most importantly, the players that participated had a good experience, and that's really our first standard that we need to meet as we roll out the Epic Poker League.
I've heard a lot of positive things about it. Obviously, if you're associated with it, it's going to be a class act. You got Annie in there running it too as commissioner, who has everything from a bracelet winning on down, and you got Matt Savage running your tournaments. And 441 as a production behind is not bad either. What are the things that you're going to improve? What kind of little snafus did you run into then?
Well, registration for the first day of the main event got a little backed up. But it was really sort of a high-class problem to have. The cage at the Palms, I think there was a line at one point that, you know, was kind of deep. Not our preferred customer experience, but, you know, this was a little bit of a shakedown cruise for everyone involved. But we're already, and we were that day, already figuring out how to make it more efficient for the next event, which is just a couple of weeks away. I know Annie has already, I think, extended the dinner break by 15 minutes in response to some player feedback. There may be some adjustment to the structure. You got to talk to her about that. But overall, you know, we're listening, and Annie's actively soliciting feedback from the players that participated, and we're gonna you know, make it what they want it to be.
Jeffrey, let me get into a couple of the questions that Dennis and I have raised over the course of the last several months, ever since you and Annie came on the show and announced the league and gave away some of the details early on, and then we've had other details that have come up over the course of the last several weeks. You announced the TV deal with CBS and this new Velocity channel. But there are still questions about where the money is coming from. I mean, you're running a no-rake main event with $400,000 added. There'll be a million-dollar tournament at the end of all of this after the four big events. You haven't announced any big sponsors, and from what I hear, I wasn't at the Palms, but from what I hear, there were no banners or signs for any big sponsors. So the basic question I think a lot of people have is, where's the money coming from?
Right. So, you know, we're a venture business, right? And what that means is that success and doesn't complete success doesn't happen overnight. We have a 3 to 5 year horizon for building this company out, and it's going to take some time. But the first thing that we've needed to do is demonstrate that we can organize the events, we can start to stage the events. And we could start to produce some TV shows. There's no mystery to our business model. And I know some people have attempted to imply that there is a mystery, but there really isn't. And I want to be really clear about what our business model is. We are going to sell sponsorship. We haven't sold any sponsorship yet because we are just starting. We just staged our first event. We haven't even been on television yet. So we're just launching the product. But we've hired a terrific partnership marketing executive who is very seasoned and experienced and widely regarded in the sports marketing world. He's been on board just a few weeks now. So we're just beginning to go to market now that we have an event under our belt and we have our TV deals announced, which weren't announced until a couple of weeks ago. But we will sell sponsorship. And I think that the WSOP, by way of example, has demonstrated, and I had something to do with it, at least when I was there, that there is an appetite for non-endemic sponsors in poker. And we're going to build on that. And they've been very successful over the last couple of years continuing to sell sponsorships. So we think that that's a great indicator of the path that we're going to go down. But we're very confident that we are going to be able to sell sponsorships successfully. But it's going to take a little bit of time, but that's okay. We are going to have a licensed product to sell. We are going to have events that we license in other parts of the country and the world. We'll go to Europe. We'll go to Asia. We'll do an event outside of Las Vegas in the United States, not all at once, but over the next couple of years. That's on our hit list. And our media rights will develop more value over time. I'm very confident in that. If you look at all those business lines, it is identical to the business model of the World Series of Poker and other sports brands. There's no mystery there. But the piece that we're adding on top of it is social media gaming. Anyone who's familiar with a company like Zynga, for instance, which just filed for its IPO, that is a very successful company, and they are in the social media gaming business, and so are we. Our game just launched the other week on Facebook, sort of soft launch. We're just getting going, but we expect that to perform well for us over time. And by the way, we now own the Heartland Poker Tour, which is a very successful business. So when you put that all together, there's no mystery. That's our business model. And that's what we're focused on. Now I'll answer your next question, which I know is coming, which is probably about real money online gaming. And what I'll say about that is if and when, but if it becomes legal in the United States, we will take a look at that opportunity. But it isn't legal today. And we're focused right now on only being in businesses that are legal and businesses that fit with any other sports brand. So that's the business model. There's no mystery.
The one thing that I worry, April 15th, I think, really dealt you guys a pretty bad blow. It dilutes the, I'm trying to say this right, but the telephone, the television time doesn't mean as much to the pros now because they're not sponsored. They're not getting bought into these events just because they're televised. So the majority of the 250-plus players that qualify for this are going to be shelling out their own money to play in it. And they've got to make choices in bankroll, serious bankroll choices. Do you want to play in a game where you're sitting around a table that five or six of the people you've probably seen on TV before that are very high-quality players, or do you want to spend it in some of these other tournaments, perhaps going overseas or something like that? Do you think there's going to be any sponsorship come back in there? Do you think there's going to be any way that maybe we can make it, that it'll be made better for some of these pros to enter it rather than having to shell out the $20,000.
Well, we are adding prize money to each event, and our championship is $1 million free roll. You know, I think that we're not going to be for everyone, and we never have expected that every one of our members will play every single event. Some players are going to make choices that say, you know what, I don't want to play in one of the most competitive tournaments out there. that's not for everyone. But I think that there are plenty of players who want to step up to the challenge and say, you know what, I want to play just with my peers, and I want to see how I do. And along the way, I could win some nice prize money and get some nice TV exposure. And I think that our first event with 137 entrants, that suggests that there are some people who do see some value in that. So, you know, look, we're taking it one event at a time. We're listening very carefully to the feedback from the players that are choosing to participate. But I think poker is, in this country, clearly going through a bit of a shift in terms of how the community is structured. And I continue to be not just a fan of the game, but an optimist about how poker continues to grow. And I think that the more poker there is on television, the more experiences there are available for the pros to shine, I think that's good for everyone. There may be some people who disagree with that, but I don't really understand why. I think that what we're doing can only further mainstream the game, and that's good for everyone who cares about or is involved in poker.
Jeffrey, you had 129 pros out of the 253 who have league cards. 129 of them played, plus 8 who qualified in your Pro-Am. Andy Block was the 9th qualifier from the Pro-Am, but he already had a card. So, as you said, 137. Only 3 of those were Europeans who made the trip over for this event. Maybe they're feeling a little burnout of their bankrolls after the World Series, or too much time in the Nevada heat got to them, and they weren't ready to come back yet. You didn't have any of the top Full Tilt pros. You didn't have Doyle. You didn't have Johnny Chan. And most vocally, you didn't have Daniel Negreanu, who took to his blog last week and said he doesn't think he doesn't think that the league can survive, and so he doesn't want to play in it, which to me seems like an odd argument, because if he's not invested in the league and he wants to just win poker tournaments, why wouldn't he go play a no-rake overlay tournament like yours? Does it make sense to you, anything that Daniel said, or do you want to rebut his arguments?
Well, let me come back to that in a second. First, let me address the turnout. For this first event, we didn't expect a strong representation of European players because a long WSOP had just concluded. Of the players that showed, that represented about 60 to 65% of the eligible North American players. So by that measure, it was a really, really strong turnout in terms of getting a lot of the people who were, you know, based, you know, relatively close to Vegas. So we were pleased with that. But, you know, we've got to sort of wipe the slate clean and prove ourselves all over again in the second event. Which we're prepared to do, but the turnout may be less, it may be more, we don't know. We're going to welcome, obviously, everyone who shows up. We also, you know, some folks have asked, why is the second event so close to the first? Originally, it was scheduled for the end of September, but we moved it earlier in the month out of respect for the World Series of Poker Europe, which announced its schedule after we had already announced, and I think they had shifted their dates a little bit. So I don't know that next year our first two events will run up so close to one another. But as you know, the poker tournament marketplace, you know, has its moments where it's pretty crowded. So we've been trying to find some white space where we weren't stepping on anyone else. And you know, every year we'll just have to take a look at that. As far as the comments you referenced, all I'm going to say is this. I offered last month to sit down with him personally and answer any question he had and have an intelligent discussion about what we're doing. He declined to meet with me. So, no, I don't really want to take my time to rebut what he said. He has a right to express whatever view he wants, as informed or not informed as it may be, and that's all I have to say on the matter.
All right. Well, let's get to a more favorable subject on that one. I just came back from Turning Stone, the Heartland Poker Tournament up there that was tremendously attended. They had 443 in the main event. I can see a lot of possibilities here. Have you figured out some way to utilize the success of the Heartland Tour to drive people maybe to the Poker League, or to use it as a feeder or a minor league? Or how are you going to tie the two of them together?
We haven't quite finished the threading of that yet. We've been working on that, and we were working on that in Vegas as the tournament was underway. But it's fair to say that by the start of next season, the next HPT season, there'll be a clear thread between what happens at the Palms, what happens with the Pro League, and what happens at the local and regional level through HPT. Of course, that's why we bought them. We want to offer a sort of complete poker entertainment experience that ties it all together, and that's what we're focused on.
When is the first telecast going to be on CBS?
We haven't announced the full telecast schedule yet. We're going to do that in the next couple of weeks, probably before our second event starts. But I can tell you it will be towards the end of September, beginning of October, as a little sort of, you know, trying to not avoid the question but give you something. But it's this fall, and it won't be before the end of September.
All right, and before we let you go, I do have to ask you one other thing about the guy who won your inaugural pro event, and that is Chino Ream, who, of course, Dennis knows from the 2008 World Series of Poker main event, where they were both members of the November 9. Chino took down the $1 million prize. By the way, is it true that the players adjusted the first-place money? They took some money away from second place so that first place could be $1 million?
Yes, the final group of players cashed, voted unanimously to adjust the payout so that first prize could be $1 million. They did that, with Annie in the room, and
wow.
I think out of an expression of support to have us start in with as strong a message as we can, which I appreciated, and I know Annie did, and it also showed that, you know, we obviously want to be responsive, and so we were thrilled that they chose to do that.
So I want to ask about Chino Ream, and maybe Dennis, you can think of a good way to ask this question, because you know what I'm leaning towards, right?
I do, and there isn't a polite way to do it, but I know that I just knowing Jeffrey, and I know the level at which you respect poker and you want to make sure it's done right and everything. There's been a lot of bad press from Chino, a lot of questions about some of his past actions and such. Are you going to address that, or how are you going to address that? And you know, do you see Chino playing the rest of the season?
It's already being addressed, and been addressed by our Standards and Conduct Committee, which met on Monday. I'm not a member of the committee, but I do know that they met, that they deliberated. They have come up with a ruling, which we are going to announce shortly. And I think that the fact that Chino won, and the fact that he has some issues, shall we say, to manage through, is going to be a good case study in how the first ever Standards and Conduct Committee like ours in poker functions. And I think that you'll see that we have a good process. It's our committee is actually chaired by an independent professional corporate ethicist who is one of the leading corporate ethicists in the country. He's also a former either state's attorney or federal prosecutor. I can't remember offhand. But he chairs the Standards and Conduct Committee, and they have had great process helping us plan to the launch of the league. And this is their first sort of case, if you will. So there's going to be an announcement coming out about their decision pretty shortly. And I think that this is going to potentially be a positive in terms of our demonstrating exactly how we are trying to further mainstream and better present the game. And that means dealing with any issues that players have in a transparent manner and trying to create constructive solutions. So I think this will be interesting to watch as it unfolds.
Well, at the very least, Chino winning a million means a lot of money gets spread around in the poker community. And let's just leave it at that.
Well, I know there have been some reports that he paid out that night to a lot of people and a lot of money. And, so you're not wrong in that.
Yeah. One of the people he paid was Ben Lamb, who's the World Series of Poker Player of the Year, who will be our guest next week, and we'll dive into that a little bit more. Anyway, Jeff, we appreciate your coming on and answering all these questions. Congratulations especially on the $53,000 you raised for Operation USA's work in Joplin. I can tell you, I talked to somebody from there this morning. They are starting school tomorrow. At 3 months after the tornado tore that town apart, they're going to have 92% of the kids in school with all the teachers. Some of them are going to school in a mall and some of them in trailers, but they're all going to be there, and the town is pulling itself back together, and you guys are responsible for some of the help in making that happen. So congratulations on that, and we look forward to getting more news out of you and Annie in the future about the Epic Poker League. We appreciate your time today.
I love coming on. I will talk to you as often as you'll tolerate me, and maybe we'll chat again right around our next event, which starts that event week starts September 2nd at the Palms.
All right, Jeffrey Pollock, Executive Director of Federated Sports and Gaming, the Epic Poker League, the Heartland Poker Tour, and we appreciate him coming on here today on the Final Table. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips in Indiana, where he's getting ready for the Indiana State Poker Championships at the Hollywood Casino. We'll be joined in a few minutes by Brian Rast, the guy who took down the 50K Poker Players Championship this summer at the World Series of Poker. But first, it's time for our poker coaching segment from StackemCoaching.com. Rethink your poker at Stack'em Coaching, and here's one of their coaches now, Joe Tian. Hi, Joe. How are you today?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you got
doing
for
great.
Us? What do you have for us today, Joe?
Today I was going to talk about bet sizing, actually. One of the biggest things I see with bet sizing is that a lot of players are afraid to give off bet sizing tells. Like, for instance, they'll always be c-betting two-thirds of the pot on the flop, or they'll always be doubling the size of their flop bet on the turn. And this is, like, regardless of their hand strength or the board texture. I think it's okay to be unbalanced and to bet different amounts in different situations. When I teach my students about bet sizing, I always talk about what are their opponents' calling ranges. And also, we talk about what things they need to protect against, like when they're betting on the flop or on the turn, what are they trying to protect against? And also, when they're betting the river, what are they trying to get called by, and or what are they trying to bluff out? So those are a few of the different things we talk about when we're talking about bet sizing.
Well, the one thing that I've always tried to do is to bet enough to do the job, whatever that particular thing is that you want, to push them out of the pot or to entice them to come back in, but not to overbet. And I see so many, especially rookies or amateurs, overbet, put more money at risk than they need. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, exactly. A lot of times you'll see some pretty dry board, like, like a king eight deuce flop or something like that, where there's no need to ever even bet more than, like, I would never even bet more than half the pot on on a flop like that. But a lot of times, like on a draw heavy board, you know, if there's straight cards or flush cards out there and you have like an overpair that you really are trying to protect or a set, it's okay to bet big on those flops, bet, you know, close to the pot, things like that, because you're going to get called by a lot of different hands, a lot of different flush draws, straight draws. And you're never going to know, like, you know, what your opponent hit in those situations. So it's best to get more money in on the flop in those situations. But for the most part, I think people do tend to overbet or to bet a little more than they need to in general.
I think you're absolutely right, and there has been a lot of rethinking of the whole concept of C-betting and all the rest in the last couple of years, and the dynamic has definitely changed. Joe Tien from StackemCoaching.com, if you want to try it for free, go on the site, StackemCoaching.com, and fill out the form and use the promo code FINALTABLE, and you'll get a free trial of the site. See if you like it, see if you think the stuff that Joe and John and the other coaches there are doing with their students gives you more help in figuring out how your game needs to change to become more of a winning player. Joe, thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much.
StackemCoaching.com, where you can rethink poker. Again, the promo code FINALTABLE for a free trial. We're back with more of the Final Table Poker Radio Show right after this on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcast on thechipleader.com.
Kids, are you caught up in that old game of shuffling your debt around and hoping you'll get lucky and win the jackpot? Well, it's time to deal. Mortgage rates are low and savings are high. So stop bluffing and call 800-GRANNY-8 or go to granny8.com. You bet our friendly loan officers make it easy, and we don't have an application fee. So call 800-GRANNY-8 and you'll be holding all the aces.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
Granny8.com.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Don't forget our podcasts are available on thechipleader.com. This is our 133rd show. You can listen to any of our previous shows either via iTunes or by going to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, and clicking on the guests on the right side of the page where you can listen to any of our previous guests from our most popular show ever, which would be the one we did last year with Jennifer Harmon, or the one we did a couple weeks ago with David Sands and Erica Motino, or the one we did with Phil Hellmuth, or pretty much any big name in poker we've had on the show. You'll find them on that website. Get there via thechipleader.com. Now, we're waiting on Brian Rast, having a little trouble connecting with him, but it does give me a chance to plug some upcoming things here in the Harrah's Poker Room in St. Louis. There's a big tournament coming up on the 27th. Saturday the 27th is the $10,000 double shootout. This is just like the World Series of Poker qualifiers that they did last year. You essentially come in, you put up your $200 buy-in, you sit down at your table, and you beat the table. By doing that, you qualify to get to the final table. And by getting to the final table, all you have to do now is win that table, and you win yourself $10,000. Everybody who gets to the final table will be paid, assuming that we sell this thing out, and I think that we probably will. They'll take 50 people in each of two flights, one at noon and one at 3 o'clock. If you bust out at the noon and you want to try it again for another $200 at 3 o'clock, you can certainly do that. But it's $10,000 in cash to the winner of the double shootout, the final Saturday of this month, August 27th. If you want to find out about all the other tournaments that are going on, you should call the Poker Room here at 314-770-7600 or go to harrahs.com/STLPoker. And it's not just about tournament poker here. There are cash games going on all the time. We've got a PLO game that starts at this very table as soon as I finish up the show here with Dennis at 4 o'clock. And the PLO goes every day of the week. In fact, I was here on, I think it was on Friday night, and played until about 6 o'clock in the morning. And we had two tables with a list until about 3 o'clock in the morning, Dennis. It is a great place for lots of PLO action, plus lots of no-limit action, and the limit games that go on here as well, from 3-6 all the way up to 20-40. So if you're in St. Louis, this is the place to play poker, the Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis. Now, while we're waiting to connect with Brian Rast, the winner of the 50K Poker Players Championship, talk a little bit more about Chino Rehm, who we talked about with Jeffrey Pollack in our previous segment, and we alluded to the fact that Chino owes a lot of money around town. You know the guy from the November 9 in 08. Tell us what your thoughts on this are.
Well, I'm really hoping the guy will get his act together and do the right thing, and that he's paid most of the people back. I know he intends to. I know Chino fairly well. And if he had the money, he would be, there's no doubt in my mind that he would pay and honor all the debts and that. But the problem is that he has run up a number of bills, that he has gone borrowing from one person to another and such. And it's just, that's a horrible pattern to get into. And hopefully this one will, and I have no idea, but hopefully he had enough of the pot of his own. You have to know, he won $1 million. Chino did not take home $1 million.
Yeah.
Somebody put him in the tournament. He sold parts of himself. I don't know what percentage, but he easily could have had two-thirds or maybe even higher of that prize pool that belongs to other people. So,
now,
again, I don't know what he had, but go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, Jeffrey said we're going to hear from their Standards and Conduct Committee. They're not ready to announce the decision that they came to yesterday. I thought maybe he would make some news here on our show today. What's an appropriate way for something like the Epic Poker League to handle a player like Chino?
Well, honestly, I think their hands are tied a little bit, because most of the action, most of these loans, most of everything else was done prior to the Epic Poker League ever having an event. And it's going to be tough for them to go back unless there's some clear case of a fraud, of cheating, of, you know, something that way, of doing anything against Chino, because he did nothing with the Epic Poker League. He did nothing against any of the players or in the action there or anything like that. To my knowledge, anyone who had a portion of him in that tournament, he did pay off. So I'm not for sure they could maybe come out and make some statements. They could maybe clarify some of their ruling and their standards. But I would be very surprised if they could really discipline Chino for anything, for any future play or anything like that with the Epic Poker League. Your thoughts?
Well, I don't think that there's anything that they can do about it. I think that there has to be an awareness, however, in the poker community that, particularly at the pro level, there are people who are playing in tournaments with guys who they have staked, who they have backed in the tournament. I mean, I'm not a pro, you are, but there have been times when you and I have played in a tournament and we've swapped 5% ahead of time. We'll agree, you know, I'll take 5% of you, you take 5% of me. And I've done that with other recreational players when we've played in small to medium to bigger tournaments. I don't think that that's the sort of thing that needs to be disclosed, but I do think that when you're talking about pros who have put money in the pockets of other players to get them into an event, that might affect play during the tournament. Or am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. And there is already a ruling in place. Now, I wish Jeffrey was in here to verify. To my understanding, once you reach the money, that has to be disclosed to each and every player that's still playing. If player A is sponsoring player B and they both are in the same tournament and they both are in the money, it has to be disclosed to everybody out there. But if you just have a backer, someone who is not playing in the tournament, that does not have to be disclosed to anybody else. The question I have is if the guy has multiple people that he's backing. This sideline person has four different horses in it, and maybe two or three of them make the money. Now, they are not, you know, obligated to reveal that they are backed. They're not obligated because there is nothing between the two of them. But if they're part of almost a team, how do you handle that? I could see that being a problem.
I could see it being a problem with one player dumping chips to another. I'm not going to say his name, but you and I both know the name of a prominent poker professional who's been accused of this in many different events where he's got other people who are playing with him, taking chips as they go along, but when they get to a table with him or another team member, their instructions are dump.
Yeah. Now, and things like that can absolutely happen, and it's going to be very difficult to address it. Now, first of all, that Chino was never accused of that, and I don't think
he's
ever done it, and that's not yet. So don't confuse this, folks. This is not
correct.
Chino we're talking about.
Correct.
But by the same token, there's got to be something clear-cut. Now, if I'm not mistaken, if you're a backer for somebody like in the PGA or something like that, you're not allowed to play in the event then. And I wonder if that's a ruling that's somehow or other going to have to be placed into poker tournaments. That if you're a backer, if you're a person doing this, if you're providing even a percentage of another player, you yourself are not allowed to play in it. Now, that would be almost impossible to enforce right now.
Or maybe it needs to be more like NASCAR. You know, you got drivers out there who are all part of the same team, and they may be using one car to block another car so that the other team member can take a lead. But again, that's pretty apparent because everybody knows who's on whose team. You don't have that in poker.
Well, if they're wearing the same shirt, it ought to help. That'll help a little bit.
Well, no, not necessarily. When you and your other Poker Stars pros or the Full Tilt pros or the Ultimate Bet pros were wearing them back in the logo days, you didn't have deals with Joe Hashem and Vanessa Russo and Vanessa Selps, did you?
Hell no, but I'd sure take their chips. No, it's an area that hasn't been fully developed. I love the idea that the Epic Poker League has a division, has a group, has a committee, whatever you want to call it, that's going to look into these things and try to clarify it and try to make sure that it's equal in play for all players. It may come down to where, you know, full disclosure somehow or other has to be put out there. Maybe it's disclosure to that particular tournament, Epic Poker League, when you walk in you say, this is my backer, this is who has a percentage of me, whatever, so that they have all of the information, and then it's their discretion when or if that needs to be released. I don't know. But I could see times even before you get into the money where you're sitting down at a table and, you know, there's another person at the table that's backed by the same person who's backing you. Will that affect, even subconsciously, will that affect your play? I don't know. That's a very, very good question.
Yeah, I think it could lead to, you know, I don't want to call it direct collusion at the table, but even if it's just somebody soft playing against somebody else, knowing that they probably have a big hand and they don't want to take them off of it, or putting a squeeze play on other players, these are things that you always have to be conscious of whenever you see two people who you know for a fact are really good friends and they're playing at the table. Or, you know, I played in a cash game, a cash PLO game at one of the places in Vegas during the series. It wasn't at the Rio. It was at another casino. And it was late at night, and two guys came and sat down. One of them sat down, and then the other one came and took an empty seat about 15 or 20 minutes later. And it was very apparent to me within just a couple of rounds that these guys were working together, that on at least one hand that I was not involved in, one of them put in a bet, a player who was not affiliated with them called the bet, then the second member of the team three bet, and the other member of the team now four bet, and squeezed out this other player. And when their cards got turned over, they had essentially junk, but they had taken the chips off of this other player. Now, this was not tournament action. This was in a cash game. And it was very apparent, and I and one of the other players at the table actually mentioned it, and these two guys went to bed shortly thereafter. Now, I don't know how much you can do about that, but I did alert the floor so that they would know to watch out for these guys if they come in again. But that is the sort of thing that players need to be aware of when it's going on, when you see something like that that's suspicious. If you think maybe these two guys know each other, maybe they're soft playing or maybe they're squeezing other players out at the table, cash or tournament, you definitely need to speak up about it.
Oh, I agree with that 100%. The problem you have is what if you have a father-son? What if you have two brothers? What if you have a husband and a wife at the table? I mean, where do you draw the line? How, this is going to be very difficult ruling, because the problem is, even if there is no collusion, if there's the appearance of collusion, if there's a hand in there that's questionable, you know, it's bad for the game and it's bad for a tournament. So, you know, that's a very tough question, a very tough position. And I'm not for sure how I would rule on a lot of these things, but full disclosure is about the only way I could go. Make sure everybody knows everything. If this is my son playing in seat six, then you better announce it to the table. You know?
Yep.
Full disclosure is probably the best way to go. And, you know, but honestly, subconsciously, we collude at a table occasionally without even realizing we're doing it. And you and I both know that. If you sit down at a table and there's another player who you've played against for years and you know he's a damn good player, and you have two or three other people there that you don't know or have never played or appear to be a little bit less experienced, who are you going to pick on? Now give me
right.
a break.
Right. I mean, you and I can't remember the last time you and I played a big pot, because why would you pick on me and I pick on you when we know exactly how the other one plays? We're going to hopefully find somebody else at the table who we can pick on in the right spots.
You see, this is one of the problems that Poker Stars had online. It wasn't that people even knew who the other players were, but they play a 10-man sit-and-go. And the same people would play in a lot of different ones, so you'd recognize their symbol or their avatar or their name or whatever. And you'd recognize that he's a good quality player. So you're sitting down with six people you don't know and two people you do, and you know those two are very good. Who are you going to try and pick on? Who are you going to play against? So it's actually an unintentional collusion.
Yep.
And the same thing happens in cash games, and I'll tell you the same thing happens in tournaments. I'll just be blunt about it. If I sit down at a table and Bernard Lee's across the table from me, and it's early in a tournament, I don't want to lose all my chips to him, and I don't think he wants to lose them to me.
Right.
It may happen, but it's going to be a cooler of some sort.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. And from the cash game perspective, you know, you sit down at a table. Let's say you're out of town. Let's say I'm at the Hollywood Casino later this week. The locals there know each other. I don't really know them. They're
Absolutely.
Probably going to look at me and think, okay, you know, we're going to play. They don't say anything to each other. But the seven or eight of them who know each other may look at me as the out-of-towner, and it's like, okay, let's go after this guy's money instead of pounding heads. Of course, when you get to a certain level, I think when you're playing 5-10 or above, you have players who are all of fairly equal skill who are willing to take anybody's chips at any time. That's actually what I call the Ms. Rocky syndrome, because you'll remember last year, Robert and Michael made it to the final table of the 50K Poker
yep.
Players Championship, and who took Robert Mizrachi's money? Michael Mizrachi. He may be my brother, but he has my chips.
There's an old saying, there are no friends at the poker table. And let me tell you, when you're playing in a tournament or you're playing something like that, it doesn't make any difference if you know it's if it's your wife, if it's your brother, if it's whatever. If you can get the chips, you should go after them.
Well, you know what? That's what David Sands and Erica Motino said to us last week. They were prepared
absolutely.
To three-bet shove on each other because you're in the main event of the World Series of Poker and you're in the top 30 players. You want to get chips, and it doesn't matter whose chips they are.
Yeah, absolutely so.
Now, before we go here, and I'm sorry for some reason we couldn't connect with Brian Rast here today. We'll try to reschedule him for a future show. Since we talked so much about Chino winning the Epic Poker League, let's talk about the guy who came in second. The cyborg, yeah. Eric Seidel, who with his $600,000 win in that event is now over $6 million for the year.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And just think, they took a little money out of second place and gave it to first. Do you think Eric cares?
I think that $17,000 is a tip at dinner for him. But how about the rest of the table? Jason Mercier, Huck Seed, Hassan Abib, and Gavin Smith. Now, there have been all these online forums speculating this was the toughest final table ever. I don't know that you can say that about this one if you've ever watched any of the other high roller events or some of the others that have gone on in some of the events, not just at the World Series of Poker, but on the WPT and elsewhere, where there have been six pretty darn good players. But this is probably amongst the best. Somebody did the total here, Dennis. Those six guys at that final table last week had over $45 million in combined lifetime earnings.
That's so sick.
That is
oh
sick.
Oh, my gosh.
That is stunning.
I can't even think of anybody on there. I take that back. There isn't anybody on that final table, on that six, that anybody wants to face.
Right.
Period.
Absolutely.
So.
All right, that's it for our final table here today. We'll be back next Tuesday with reports from the Indiana State Poker Championship at the Hollywood Casino. Dennis is there now. I'll be arriving tomorrow. I think we're probably both going to play in the Deep Stack event that goes on there on Thursday, and then we'll both be in the main event on Saturday and Sunday and report back to you on that next Tuesday. Also next week, we'll be joined by Ben Lamb, who not only made the final table of the 50K this year, but also is at the final table of the main event. He is the player of the year at the World Series of Poker thus far this year and has a chance to take it all down in the fall when the November 9 reconvenes. He'll be our guest next week here on the Final Table Poker Radio Show. He's Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. We're live from Harrah's St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.